Game On Rugby.
Welcome back to Tuesday's Game On, but right now we're taking you back to Friday here in studio when Conor Murray joined me before his late show appearance to discuss his new book, Cloud Nine, and his decision to announce his retirement from professional rugby that very afternoon.
Game On Rugby.
Conor, how does recently retired sound?
It's only a couple of hours old that I've fully announced it, I suppose, but it feels great. Yeah, it was a... you know, you kind of felt it coming, I suppose. So, like, to finally be able to say it
you
clearly.
Felt, you more than felt it coming.
I felt it
just
coming for a
dawn
long time.
On you
yeah,
right, like.
Yeah, look, I was keeping it open-ended to see if anything came across the table to suit.
When you say
family.
To suit, that obviously means abroad.
Abroad and
France,
somewhere nice
England.
To live. Yeah, maybe not England, but somewhere sunny and France or Japan or Australia. And there was a couple came.
Yeah.
And... they just didn't suit, yeah. Like, I think I've filled my boots. I've kind of squeezed everything out of myself, I think. I know. In Ireland, in Munster in Ireland. And it would only have been really for my family to bring them abroad and live somewhere sunny for a short period of time.
Do you think Alfie would have known where he was?
I know, exactly. Yeah, more Joanna was driving this bus now than me. So I feel really content to say I'm done now.
Content?
Yeah.
Anyway, relieved or just content?
Content and relieved. You're like, I suppose, like you probably know yourself, like it was getting to the point where it was nearly
work.
A bit of a drag. Yeah, yeah, a bit of a chore. But I remember, I think Andy Farrell said it, like, you need to go before, not to me, but like he said it to a group, you need to go before it becomes a chore because people will see through it then. So I think I just about got out before it became tough.
Are you more than just got out? I
mean,
if you look back at your record, 134 caps was it? I have notes written everywhere here for Ireland, 15 years on the senior ranks with Munster. Like, that's a long career.
Yeah.
You must have looked after yourself incredibly well.
I did, thankfully, yeah, yeah. And it was long, but... you know, and I suppose people say like it goes really quickly. Not that it dragged, but I enjoyed it all. It felt really real. It felt like 15 years of great times, ups and downs. And like I've loads of mates, not loads, but lads who retired through injury or didn't get a contract renewed. And you know, I feel very, I suppose, fortunate. I got to call it on my own terms with me, Pete, and Cian with Ireland over in Rome, and then. Down in South Africa with Munster, albeit we lost, but you can't have the perfect.
Can't get every high.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So we had plenty of highs, thank God.
Plenty of highs. I'm sure there could have been a low or two too. If you were to pick one low moment first, what would you say? Jeez, I wish that hadn't happened. Career wise,
yeah. I wish it didn't happen. There was a low moment really early in my career against Racing where I tried to dummy a kick. I got caught.
You
were
showing off that day, no?
Oh, no, I was just too tired to kick it out. I genuinely.
I did read it in the book.
It was a mud
bath. Wet day, mud bath.
Yeah, yeah. So that was what I'm glad happened. Because
that's a mistake, though. That's not a low moment. That's a mistake, and surely, I always felt, and maybe you don't, but mistakes make you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, I felt low after the mistake, but definitely made me. I'm glad I went through it. I understood the kind of ramifications of. Not doing the right thing. Good learning curve. I was 22 or so. But low was the feeling after the 2023 quarterfinal against New Zealand, the loss.
There's no repairing that.
No repair. That's a scar that will be there forever, I suppose. And just because, I was trying to describe it before, we don't pay attention to like world rankings, but in 2019 we went to the World Cup and we kind of had just reached number one in the world. We're aware of it, people tell you about it, but we don't talk about it. In 2023 we went there and we were aware, there was no avoiding it. We were world number one for a long time, for I don't know, maybe over a year. We had beaten the All Blacks, we had gone to New Zealand and won a series. We'd done it, I suppose we kind of done it all, so we legitimately had a reason to think we could do well at the World Cup. And I know you have to win it on the day, and we didn't manage to do it against New Zealand. So like we weren't ready to leave France at that stage. We were having such a good time in the Stade de France every weekend. The zombie song, the Fields of Athenry, the whatever songs the Mad Irish were singing, and then it just ended so abruptly. And it was such a good opportunity that unfortunately.
Unexpected?
Yeah.
That hurts.
Yeah. we spoke about it in the debrief over the next few days with the players, with a few beers on board, and we were all just like, we weren't expecting it. And I suppose that's weird saying it as an Irish rugby or sports.
Though,
yeah, we weren't.
Which was the brilliance of it. Yeah. You went there as favourites and you were carrying that mantle.
And we were doing well with it up until... I think I would always look back at that game at the start of it. We just started so slowly and we were starting so well in games leading up to that, and we the All Blacks just got a 19-0 lead or something. I'm not sure if that's exactly correct. And then we clawed our way back to within... Like, I have a moment, I give away a penalty, Jordy Barrett kicks it, we get back in the game. You know, poor Ronan Keller gets held up, and like 9 out of 10 times he'll get that down. Like, talking about my book, I was thinking of nearly taking the ball off Ronan and going down the blind side, and it was just Aaron Smith there, who's I'm probably bigger physically than him. So all kinds of ifs, buts and maybes, and that's sport, I suppose, and that's the way it goes, isn't it?
But the flip side of that is, if I gave you an opportunity to live one moment again, what would you think?
I'd live Chicago 2016 again. There was an argument there for 2018 away to England to win the Grand Slam. That was up there too. But Chicago was just the dream week, really. It was such a novelty of going to the States, playing the All Blacks. You know, the serious and the sad side was Anthony Foley stuff before that, you know, the Glasgow week. And then we went and we did the figure of eight, and which was beautiful. And but just that week, that game, you know, I was in flow that game. I've accessed it a few times. I don't know how to access it. Obviously, you would have done it every time, but things felt easy that day. It felt because it was such a novelty of being in Chicago playing those boys, it didn't feel pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I remember I was room with Zeebo that week, and
so that was always.
He's a tonic; like, he can just make you feel like the best player in the world. And he was like, "We're going to rip it up today," and blah blah blah. And you're going to throw me the ball, and we actually ended up doing all of those things that we said we'd do. So
was he a visualizer then?
A dreamer and an ultra positive guy, and just a joy to be here. Like, I remember before that game, I'd usually get to the ground, go to the dressing room, music in the ears, serious enough, like laid back, but, you know, getting my head in the game. Whereas Eves would go out and walk around the pitch and hopefully, you know, get a few selfies and the usual. And on that day, he was like, "Come on, Murray, we'll go out and we'll do a lap or whatever." And we walked out, and it was November in Chicago, but it was blue skies, nearly warm. It was a beautiful day. And he was like, "Man, where would you rather be? Like, this is we're living the dream here." And I was like, "You know what? This is class. We are." And then we had a great day.
Away you go. I was in the Aviva when you came back that November to beat him, and it was my favourite rugby moment.
Yeah.
You played with incredible people, some great players. You played inside Rod, you played inside Johnny Sexton, you played on Lions tours with various out halves. You roomed with Mike Phillips. A hero of yours.
Yeah.
Did you appreciate all the different people you played with? Guys that were older than Mitch, the friends you've made.
Yeah.
That's almost like a childhood dream, I mean.
It is, yeah. I do. I really, as you come to the end as well, you think back on all those memories, and I really, really appreciate the opportunities that it kind of afforded me, the people I got to meet along the way. And Mike Phillips, yeah, hero. Like, probably the first tall scrum half I started looking up to, you know, because I'm... awkward for a scrum half, or just taller,
tall.
Whereas lads are usually like 5'6", 7'8" or whatever. And he paved the way. He did. He really, really did. And he was, as he says himself, he was world class at it. And then I remember 2013 going to Carlton House for our pre-Lions camp, our pre-flying to Australia camp, and walked into the room, looked on the ground, and my roommate's bag said Phillips on them, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is nerve-wracking." Like, as in, what am I going to say to this fella? Like,
what kind of a character was he?
Legend. Such a nice guy. Like, back of the bus, like, abusing lads, sitting with Paul O'Connell, slagging lads, and just holding court, and that's where the hierarchy were. And he was roaring, he was calling me a poor man's Mike Phillips for the whole tour, and he was, I remember him slagging Owen Farrell, like, that he was only there because his dad was the coach, and just dishing out slags, and then we forged a friendship over that tour, to the point where, like, we're still in touch today. He lives out in Dubai, and try and see him anytime we're out there. So so like people like that you looked up to, and now you're kind of friends.
Who was the best player you played with?
Not because he wrote the forward, but Johnny. Like you said, I had a front row seat of seeing him in action, and Rog, and obviously I only played
2 years at Rog?
Two, 3 years at Rog. And learned an awful lot really quickly with him. But then I played the majority of my career with Johnny, and he made me better quicker. Like, the standards he expected, like, straight away made me kind of clue in a little bit quicker. But just the view, the front row seat I had of seeing how he operated, how he saw space, how he commanded respect and demanded people to be in the right areas for him to make the team work, was just different level. And like, you'd see lads in camp on the computers all like hours doing computer work, and you'd never really see Johnny on it. Now, he did do computer work, but his IQ was so high. So
you need to see it once.
Only need to see it once, and would remember moments from games when he's talking in meetings and things. Just ultra impressive, and yeah, he'd be the number one.
Who did you dislike most playing against? I won't say dislike most. I wouldn't ask you that kind of a personal question. But anyone you didn't like playing against, you thought he's awkward. He's just can't be. Yeah, no, not looking forward to that.
Dave Toner. Straight away, yeah, the length of him, sure, like. Yeah. I'd be kicking from the base of the ruck, like, and he would just always be there, and like, it's hard enough hitting it over tall enough, and he's like so tall. So him, Dave was all, even like, yeah, the forwards in Ireland would say it, like, he'd be injuring his own players, like stepping on lads' toes when he didn't mean to, and just like elbows and edges, and just, who said he was, it was like tackling a coffee table standing upright. It was like tackling Dave. So he was just an awkward fella to play against. And Kieran Reid was just a tough player with New Zealand, just one of these like
hardcore
old school, well, slick as well, so talented, so skillful, but just like the real deal.
As such, you had three jobs, most of which are bread and butter, Ireland, and you were on three Lions tours. So if we start with the Lions, it was, I suppose, I read it, it is the ultimate accolade for any rugby player in this part of the world. Three different tours, three different countries. Is it all it's cracked up to be?
Yes, 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 and more, I suppose. Yeah, I've experienced three of them. 21 was COVID hit, and that was a strange one. It was a tour, but it kind of wasn't. The fans make up a big part of that. Australia was amazing in 2013. It was just an eye opener. It was all this new experiences for me. I was 24, and like everything happening was just like, no way, like room with Mike Phillips, and just the way it's like, you play with your club, you get looked after really well, then you go to Ireland and you get looked after a little bit better just because maybe budgets or whatever, and then you go to Lions and it's just another animal, another beast, like you've security guards going everywhere with you, and you've just all the best of everything. And like, I grew up not even thinking of Lions, like, I remember, but loving watching it. I remember the tour in 2000, the previous one in Australia was 2001, and I remember the jersey, the NTL jersey, the Lions jersey, and begging, we were down in Kerry where we'd spend our summers in Derrynane, and I was begging my dad to bring one down so I could wear it on the beach playing tip rugby, and I wore it all summer long, and we'd watch the games early in the morning in the local bar down there. Your mum would open it up for us.
Freddy's,
there you are. Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah, a little down the steps there to the TV room, and all of a sudden, like, you fast forward to 13, and you're, I remember we had to do the photo shoot for the jerseys in the Six Nations camp. They'll send the Lions jerseys over because on the day you'll be announced. Yeah. And I remember going back to my room to change into it and like putting it on the bed and being like, this is just a pinch me moment. I wasn't selected at the time, but I was like, this would be really, really cool. And then fast forward to our first game, the Barbarians, against the Barbarians in Hong Kong, looking at the jersey. It was me and Johnny were on the bench. I remember just like staring at the jersey hanging up with my name, they embroidered your name and stuff. It's really cool. And looking at it going, I'm going to wear this later and I'm going to become a Lion. So it is, it's really, really special. And I was jealous of watching the boys this summer do the same thing.
But you had great success with the Lions as well. Obviously, you won with Australia, you drew the tests with New Zealand and you ended up losing in South Africa. So like that was the ultimate, which was the Lions. Then you had Ireland, which is a huge accolade as well. So you played under three different coaches.
Yeah.
Declan, Andy and Joe in the middle.
Yeah.
How different were they?
Three very different humans, yeah. Three coaches who've won Grand Slams, which proves there's many ways to coach a team. Decky was brilliant. Decky was the guy who gave me my first shot, took a chance on me, I suppose. I was a bit of a bolter in 2011 and I suppose snuck into the squad and he mentored me quite a bit. My first few years with Ireland, again, kind of like the Lions, I was just enjoying it, taking in all these new experiences. And
which when you're young, you know.
Only
no,
young and you don't know.
No fear. You're not afraid of getting something wrong. I don't know what's going to go wrong.
I remember Dunners O'Callaghan, and I said it to him the other day, he doesn't remember saying this, but young lads don't know the consequences of, you went out and made a mistake when I was 21. I was like, oh, whatever, it's fine. And then you do it and you're 34 or 5, you're like, the consequence of me doing that. Like literally, like the penalty I gave away against the All Blacks, you're aware. So, back Decky was just he was a teacher, so he would be just looking after you away from rugby as much as he was on the pitch, and learned a lot from him. He caught me booking a holiday to Thailand on the night before we played the All Blacks, and just kind of quietly said it to me after we lost 60-0 the next day, being like, maybe just arrange your stuff a little bit better, and just trying to make you a better person, I suppose.
Should organise you.
Yeah, just look after you a bit.
What about Joe then? Much more demanding, much more clinical?
Yeah, exactly. Probably what you've heard in terms of just very detailed. Again, an ex-teacher, I'm sure. Yeah, he was. And just really detailed, really straight to the point, like what he needs from you. Very systematic.
Would he lecture you?
Quite strict, lecture you.
Bollock you,
yeah. Now, I can speak, there's lads I know who weren't selected under Joe, but were in camps, probably had a much tougher time. Whereas with me and a few other boys who we did start under Joe for his tenure, probably got away with a little bit more. You know, not misbehaving, but just like if you dropped the ball or you threw a bad pass, he probably wouldn't say as much as he would to a fella.
Or was your skin a bit thicker? You'd been there longer.
No, I remember because one of my good mates, I won't name him, but he was on the fringes and he'd be showing me stuff, clips and stuff about like someone in his position who was starting and not getting bollocked out of it, and then him doing the same thing and him getting a serve. So and also maybe a bit thicker skin that I knew I was around a little bit longer. But we had, like we'll talk about Andy obviously, but like Joe, we had such success under Joe. We two Six Nations wins, a Grand Slam, beat the All Black, like did quite a bit. And then people, say it kind of faded out or the game plan didn't work in 2019 World Cup. And to a point, that's fair. But then I remember that 2019 World Cup where we just played poorly,
In Japan.
And we just didn't.
Shocking.
I know, brutal. And put ourselves on the back foot massively. And my gripe with that is we didn't execute Joe's plan in that World Cup. You know what I mean? We just played poorly. We were dropping balls. We were throwing passes on the ground. And we didn't get to see how far that game plan would take us. Now, Andy definitely evolved it.
Yeah.
To probably where it needed to go. But that's one point I would always argue. We didn't play well in that. We just didn't play well as players. That wasn't Joe's fault.
You're human too.
Yeah. So it's unfair to judge Joe's game plan on us being poor.
Definitely. Yeah. And then you say Andy evolved it. But what else? What new? That's not the right word. What new things did he bring to the table?
Yeah. No, he did. He rugby-wise, he brought phase play, basically. So just like, I suppose under Joe, we'd have three phase moves. And, if we didn't unlock a defence in those three phases, we'd probably have to get rid of the ball or kick it or find another way. Whereas Andy was big on holding onto the ball and for as many phases as we wanted to and playing to space a little bit more, and still had our phase play moves or our line outs and strike plays, if you know what I mean. And then he just evolved us as rugby players, really, just heads up and...
But Andy have allowed you to play more off instinct control.
Free, yeah, a little bit freer, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And he'd back you to go, I suppose, where the space is, where you think you can get most reward. And that's the rugby, that's probably the main, like loads of other stuff, but that's the main rugby thing. But the environment in general just became a little bit more relaxed, you know. Joe's environments were stressful, were intense, and that's the way he wanted it. And yeah, like I said, we got success out of it. But Andy's way of coaching, or you know, the way he sees the world, is just let lads relax, be themselves, and when we're on, we're on. Like, he made it, and Joe didn't have this available to him. We have our training centre in Abbottstown, and then we've Carton House where we stay. Yeah. And he made Carton House like a non-rugby place, so we'd go to the training centre, do our
work,
intense stuff, work from 8 till 3 maybe, back to Carton House. Now, you had your laptops with your rugby on it, but other than that, there was no meetings, there was pool tables, the sport was on in the evenings, you know, relaxed. So just different ways.
Homely.
Yeah, yeah. And then that probably encouraged lads to be around the team room a little bit more, and
yeah,
you know, and be
not always being watched, not always
hiding in your room afraid of a meeting happening. Or Joe, like lads would be, he used to wreck, Jamie Heaslip said, like, Joe would have a meeting at 9 o'clock, but lads would be so feared about being late, they'd genuinely be sitting down at 8:45. And we're like, lads, we're still like 15 full minutes here, but lads were just too... So that was just the way it was. But like, I will always argue or tell you, we had a great time with Joe. We did. We had great times.
Made some players out of y'all, there's no doubt about that. Then we look at Munster, 15 years, numerous coaches. Was there ever a point in Munster you thought, maybe I'd like to go somewhere else? Or were you just red to the core?
I grew up wanting to play with Munster. Like, that was my first jersey I dreamed of putting on. I used to go to Thomond Park when I was 10 or 11 and 2 hours early so I could get to stand by the tunnel to see my heroes walk out. That was my dream. And I suppose I came into the Munster team when they were just fresh enough off winning European Cups in 2006 and 8. I came in around 10, 11. Won a Magners League and just expected it.
The ball to keep rolling.
Yeah, and it's hard probably not to make this sound arrogant, but I was like, I wonder when I'm going to win my European Cup, because it was just, they were a force. Like, and I promise you, it's not cocky, but it was just, surely this is
going to happen.
And then it was me, Pete, Earlsey, Zeebs, more lads that kind of took the reins, I suppose, after a couple of years of that, maybe 13 when Rog went. And for it to not happen, it's Pete said it, and I've heard him say it in an interview, so it's out there. Like, he would consider his Munster career a failure, and that's probably a dark way of saying it. But just overall, not to, because the holy grail for us was the European Cup.
Yeah.
Now, we managed to win the URC, which was
twice, didn't you?
Yeah, we won in when it was the Magners League in 11, then 23. That meant a lot to all of us, kind of older lads, Stephen Archer, Pete, me, Earlsey, these type of lads, because it was just a bit of a weight off our shoulders that we got our own bit of silverware. So there was always a love and a drive to do well with Munster. Your head would be turned at certain stages, but the fact, you've probably heard it before, like, we're so well looked after in Ireland, especially if you're playing with the national team. Your body is looked after really well, your game time is managed, and I suppose I was so lucky with Ireland from when Joe came in. We were successful nearly immediately, and we were successful right until I left, so that was always a carrot that I wouldn't leave, because I don't know if there's a written rule, or if it's just an...
Unless you're Johnny Sexton, there is.
Yeah, unless it's a Johnny Sexton rule and you can go to Paris and play and still get picked. But that was a risk I wasn't willing to take. I've obviously loved Munster, and I loved playing with Ireland, naturally. So it was good to me.
In your book, and I was reading it in the papers the last couple of days too, didn't have a great relationship with Graham Rowntree. And that not everybody gets on with everybody.
Yeah.
But is the lack of success just down to poor coaching, or is it more than that?
Yeah, like, the reason, not the full reason I want to do a book, or I said yes to doing it, because you don't have to do it, you know. No. What I mean? And I wanted to make sure if I did do it, I was honest in it. And I suppose I said it as it is, or how I felt at the time. And Yeah, me and Graham didn't really have, like, we were cordial, definitely, but just there was times where I didn't feel respected towards the end. And it's very hard not to sound kind of bitter about it, but you know what I mean? I get changing of the guard. Like, I know that that happens, and I still trained as hard as I could to be selected, but it wasn't about that. It was about, you know, like, I was getting 5-6 minutes sometimes off the bench, and you're like, while still being second choice with Ireland, and I'm kind of like, this doesn't make sense. So my mind, he had made up his mind about who was his number one. And there was times where me, like, there was one time me and Keith Earls dropped out of the 23 completely against Toulouse at home in Europe. Now, I had been injured, but I got injured making my 100 cap at Ireland 2 weeks previous, so it wasn't a long term injury, and came back, named the 23, and I went up to him after the train and I was like, what's going on? And he's just, you don't deserve it. And I was kind of like,
don't deserve it.
I'd never really clashed with coaches or like done anything bad here. What do you mean? And that was all I got. You know what I mean? That's as far as the conversation went. And yeah, I just felt disrespected, and I had to say it because it's how I felt.
In your opinion, what will it take to get Munster back to winning Heineken Cups?
There's the ability is there, and I genuinely mean this. I think the player ability is there. From what I've heard, the new coach, Clayton McMillan, is doing a great job. It's obviously really early days, but the boys seem to be in good spirits. Signings, you do need to make, you know, I know Leinster didn't get over the line in Europe last year, but the fact that they brought in big hitters like Orji and Jordy Barrett is something you need to look at. And I have a point in the book, and I'm glad a couple of players I spoke to before I put it out kind of agreed with me, or did agree with me, that in terms of Munster signings over the years, that there's some of them that you'd be scratching your head being like, why weren't we consulted on this? Senior players now, as soon as you became established, I suppose we would have liked to have been consulted about some signings, just because we would know someone who knows someone who could tell us about this particular
person individual.
Whether they're ability wise they're good enough, or like personality wise they'll fit into what we're about in our culture. And now, we did make some unreal signings, and you know, over the years, but there was some where we were just like, why, who's making the final call on this, lads? Like, because we're in the game here now, we would be able to offer our opinion or make one phone call and, you know, make it a bit easier. So yeah, just maybe involve some senior players or ex-players to get on board with the recruitment side of things. But I get finances and things like that. But there were times where we'd sign a fella, probably wasn't up to the standard, and we knew he was on fairly decent money. So, you know, you can't throw the finance excuse at us that way. But yeah. And
you think the scope is there? You think
I do.
A few things refined. Certain things done a bit better, a bit cleverer.
Yeah,
Munster can be competitive.
Yeah, and like I get it with Leinster and the conveyor belt they have up here of, you know, the school system and just the sheer volume of players, you're probably going to end up with more quality players in the long run, just numbers wise. It's just a numbers game. But I think, you know, with a few things like that, Munster can. And I said it last night in Thomond Park, just to reiterate it, that this comes from a place of loving Munster. This comes from a place of want Munster
to
do well. So I want to be honest, and I'm glad since it's come out, a few ex-players have been like, you know, that's great. We were all kind of thinking similar lines with the, you know, the recruitment side of things. So so I'm not just the only bad guy.
I doubt you are. But look, your career has been an incredible journey, but on your journey goes a whole load of people. Your parents, your sisters, obviously Joanne, Alfie Lee, your son didn't get to see too much of it, but yeah. Did you enjoy the journey that you've given everybody else?
I loved it, yeah. And when I retired, Mick Kearney, who used to manage Ireland, we still in contact with him, he said, you're not the only one retiring. Your parents are, Joanna is, your sisters are. Because they've been on, and my friends obviously who've come around the world and gone to games, and
but they got to go places that they've never been if you weren't there.
Yeah, so I feel really lucky that they got to do that, and they've particularly my parents have made, and my wife Joanna have made such good friends for life through rugby, and this beautiful game has given us so much outside of, you know, the pitch really.
This is something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, and something I didn't think I'd do. Like, early on, I just didn't see it as an option for me. Like, Keith Earls always slags me about being a late bloomer in terms of, like, talent-wise, wasn't up to much when I was in school and even early days. But, yeah, we got there in the end and, yeah, did something I didn't think I'd ever get to do and gave people great days out.
You surely did. I can't wrap this up or let you go without asking about your dad. Obviously, Jerry was in a bad cycling accident. How was he doing?
He's great. He was in Tone Park last night having his few pints and probably down in Ballybunion golfing today. So, yeah, look, he gave us all and himself a big scare. And it was hit or miss for a while. And, yeah, so impressive, the resilience. Like, I'm saying it today, he didn't just lay in bed and get better. He had to work really hard on his rehab and, you know, walking properly again and everything. And he was really... a source of inspiration for us watching him do it, you know what I mean? Because he's back now. He's, like I said, he's on the golf course 3, 4, 5 times a week, and thank God, back to doing everything he was doing beforehand. So lucky escape.
A very happy ending to a very sad situation. You've only retired today.
Yeah, it's gone great.
Obviously, this is a pre-record. Do you have a plan? Have you a plan, or are you just going to? I met Peter Manny last week, and he kind of didn't know what he was doing 3 months later.
Yeah.
Have you any goals, plans?
I've goals and semi-plans, like half plans that, like, Mick Kearney struck me up with Brian Crowley, my mentor for the last 10 years. And a few of us have done that, who has held my hand through all the off-field stuff and kind of gotten me ready for this moment. But in saying that, you know, sports people die twice, don't they?
I don't
know.
Agree
they
with
retire
that.
And
no,
then after.
I'm going to have that out with Brian. I just had it out with Tony McCoy. I don't agree with that. You're retiring, you're not dying. There is one hell of a difference.
Yeah, one hell of a difference.
You looked at your dad lying in the bed.
Yeah,
there
was a
that's
big,
what, big.
Sorry, perspective is completely different
huge,
after that.
Huge. No, I can't have that one.
You
it's
find yourself.
Me now.
Yeah, okay, fair. You do find what you want to do, but that, I think that'll take a couple of months or longer. So we've plans where we've. I said in the last time we're moving to Derry. We bought a house up there, where Joanna's from, and really excited about that. It's going to be a great adventure for us as a young family. She's a huge family up there, so going up there
to the bog site, watch Derry City.
Up to the Brandywell. So really excited about that, and then a couple of options work wise, but I'm gonna take a break first. I'll still stay connected to the game with the media and the punditry and things to keep me busy for a while. But yeah, half a plan. But I think you need to.
You look like someone that's looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am. And like we were chatting before, I was ready. I knew you, and it's very hard to describe to people. And a few people are like, "You're fit
just
and healthy." Yeah, but you have a feeling, don't you? You just get a feeling, and you're like, "That's me. Thanks." And so grateful. Walk away really happy and proud.
It's great to walk before you're pushed.
Yeah. Oh, so you've nailed it there. That is exactly what I feared happening. And I got to be on the pitch with Munster and Ireland for my last game with each team, which was very important to me.
Well, you should be proud of yourself.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks a million.
Cheers, Ruby. Thank you.
Game on. Rugby.